It's Friday, June 19th, 2009, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Good day, Stashers, and welcome to the podcast. It's been another fun week of work here at Normal. We're trying to get activists from all across this country, all 50 states, involved in the fight to end adult marijuana prohibition. So if you want to stand up for your rights, send me an email at stash@normal.org, and I'll get you hooked up. Got a call today from a guy named Gordon in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, who's looking for other folks in the Milwaukee area to get involved with him. And I also got an email, very interesting one, from a student at Penn State University who was a bit concerned about our Penn State chapter. I'm not aware that we have a Penn State chapter that's active and functioning, but looking back over the past couple of years, there was a fellow by the name of Jay Bundy who claims to have been running that chapter. And, well, do a Google search on Jay Bundy Penn State and tell me what you think about it. I'm looking for someone else to run a Penn State chapter, so if you got any students there, some Nittany Lions who are interested in reforming this chapter, send me an email at stash@normal.org. Also, don't forget, tonight, live on ustream.tv is Cannabis Common Sense, the production of the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, sponsors of this podcast. I'll be joining the Normal Board's Madeline Martinez, who's also executive director of Oregon Normal, as well as Paul Stanford, the head of the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, who runs medical marijuana clinics in 8 different states, for this weekly cable access show. It's a live call-in. You can call us at 503-288-4448 and check stash.normal.org. We've got a post up where you can watch the live telecast. Now, coming up in today's Daily Audio Stash, we've got your hemp headlines with some California-centric news for you, beginning with a ruling from California's EPA that declares marijuana smoke a carcinogen, a gun battle in the forest near Redding that left one man dead and 2 police injured, story from Garden Grove, California, on how much money they spent to fight the medical marijuana laws, and following up on the CNN Anderson Cooper special, a blog post from one of their correspondents that calls 22 million Americans per year losers. Now, this is one of our odd-numbered Fridays, so we'll be speaking today with Steve Bloom from CelebStoner.com to get the latest celebrity entertainment and cannabis report. Steve reports back from the MPP Playboy Mansion party that took place a couple weekends ago. We'll get his take on that. It's a wrap Friday for our daily Toker Tunes brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com. Today we'll be listening to Prophecy with his song Toke. And in our special exclusive cannabis conversation, I'll be speaking at length with Karina Amato. She's the woman in Baltimore, Maryland, whose home was burst into for a drug raid in search of marijuana, where they found nothing but killed her dog in her bedroom, as well as completely trashed the house. We'll get Karina's take on that and what she plans to do in the future at the end of our podcast in our Cannabis Conversations. Like I said, it's another great week to be working at Normal, and we want to get you involved as well. Join us at normal.org. And now it's time for your Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our normal daily audio stash, Hemp Headlines. California's EPA rules cannabis smoke is a carcinogen. From the San Jose Mercury News. Marijuana smoke is a carcinogen, sharing space on the list with arsenic, asbestos, and DDT, according to a scientific board of the California Environmental Protection Agency. Under today's ruling, some medical marijuana dispensaries will be required to label their baggies and joints with a warning that the contents, when smoked, may cause cancer. Pot brownies, lollipops, and other non-inhalables are not affected by the new ruling. Alan Hirsch, the chief deputy director of the State Office of Environmental Health Hazard Assessment, said, quote, "Marijuana smoke is a mixture of different chemicals, and a number of those were already on Prop 65. That was significant to the panel to go ahead and list marijuana smoke," end quote. Proposition 65, enacted by voters in 1986, requires the state to publish a list of chemicals known to cause cancer or reproductive toxicity, and that businesses and government agencies post warnings when they use such chemicals. Though marijuana smoke was added to the Prop 65 list today, the labeling requirements won't go into effect until June 19, 2010. Only medical marijuana dispensaries with 10 employees or more are required to post a warning, either in their shop or on the products themselves. Violations of the law carry a fine of up to $2,500 per violation per day. Dispensaries will be required to carry a warning that cannabis may cause cancer, even though cannabis does not cause cancer. Dr. Donald Tashkin's 30 years of research shows that even long-term cannabis smoking is not associated with an increased risk of head, neck, or lung cancer. He hypothesizes about a protective effect, an anti-tumoral effect, from THC that seems to mitigate the carcinogens found in marijuana smoke. But the California EPA did not need to prove that marijuana causes cancer, only that there were some chemicals in marijuana smoke that are listed as possible carcinogens by the state of California. It doesn't matter whether THC counteracts those chemicals. If even one of its chemical ingredients are on the list, California considers the whole substance carcinogenic. This would be somewhat like labeling water as an explosive, because the hydrogen in H2O is combustible. We can fully expect the prohibitionists to point to California now and say, "See, even in the land of almost legal pot, they know it causes cancer." Gun battle over marijuana plants leaves grower dead, two police wounded. From Redding.com, Little Valley, California. Members of the Lassen County Anti-Drug Task Force were scouting for illegal marijuana cultivation Tuesday afternoon near Little Valley when they came across a suspected pot garden and an armed man who began shooting at them. Two task force members, Sergeant Dave Martin and Deputy David Wagenrich, were wounded in the ensuing gun battle that left the man who started it dead, according to the Lassen County Sheriff's Office. The full names of the task force members have not been released by the Sheriff's Office. The name of the dead suspect was also not released, with the sheriff's office saying the identity was being withheld until his family was notified. Names of six other suspects also were withheld. The task force included representatives from the Lassen County Sheriff's Office, Susanville Police Department, and the BLM, according to the sheriff's office. The task force was scouting the woods south of Dixie Valley, just across the Lassen County line east of Burney, for illegal marijuana, the sheriff's office reported. There is no marijuana plant worth dying for or shooting anyone over. The details in this case are sketchy, but if you raise your firearm and shoot at a police officer, I cannot defend your actions, nor condemn theirs. This doesn't seem to be a case of self-defense, like when the SWAT team suddenly bursts in the door of your house late at night and in shock and surprise, you fire off a round or two at what you believe to be intruders, like what happened with Corey May or Katherine Johnston. This was in the middle of the day with uniformed officers in a national forest. If you're so trigger-happy as to fire at cops, who's to say you wouldn't have fired at an innocent hiker or camper? That said, I cannot defend the initial actions of the police in trampling through national forests looking for pot gardens. Does it really need to be noted that in a paradigm of legalized marijuana, we wouldn't have clandestine marijuana grows in our national forests? With legal pot, what we call growers and dealers would become farmers and co-ops, with all the affiliated rules, regulations, market realities, and profit margins that would make clandestine grows too expensive to be a viable option. After all, when is the last time you heard of a shootout in a national forest over a tobacco plantation, a hops farm, or a wine grape vineyard? Garden Grove, California spends $250,000 over 8 grams of medical marijuana. Garden Grove, California. The city has paid out $139,000 in attorney's fees to medical marijuana advocates, bringing an end to a 4-year court battle in which the city fought the return of a patient's 8 grams in spite of repeated court decisions ordering the city to give his marijuana back. Americans for Safe Access received the check Wednesday as part of a settlement agreement in the case involving Felix Kaw, whose marijuana was seized during a traffic stop. He was issued a citation. Including this payment, the city has spent about $250,000 on this case, City Attorney Thomas Nixon said today. Even at inflated dispensary prices, 8 grams of marijuana is worth less than $200. I know $250,000 is just a drop in the bucket compared to the city budget, but when it looks like you've got a hiring freeze and the local education district is wailing about state budget cuts, blowing that much bank in an unsuccessful attempt to not give back legal medical marijuana to a legal medical marijuana patient in a state that overwhelmingly supports legal medical marijuana, why, that just looks bad. Congressman Dana Rohrabacher, a strong proponent of changing federal law to allow use of marijuana for medical and personal use, said he and other members of Congress are working to end this dichotomy between federal and state law. He said, quote, "I believe federal laws relating to marijuana, especially when they are different from state laws, are counterproductive," end quote. But to spend $250,000 to prevent an adult from consuming a small amount of marijuana for medical purposes or otherwise is nonsensical, Rohrabacher said. Quote, "Anybody who can say with a straight face that spending that amount of money on this matter in a time when resources are tight cannot be taken seriously," end quote. It's not that taxing marijuana would necessarily rescue the economy, President Obama. It's that spending money on a proven futile attempt to stop adults from smoking pot is a luxury we can no longer afford.
I'm a doctor.
I'm a lawyer.
I'm a journalist.
I'm a student.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a representative.
I have cancer.
The outdated laws of prohibition are more dangerous than the plant itself.
I lost my scholarship.
I was fired.
20 million arrests since 1965. This is getting ridiculous.
Our prisons are overcrowded with nonviolent offenders.
We have the opportunity to change.
This is costing our country billions of dollars.
Making my family and I fight in a courtroom is difficult enough when I'm already fighting through chemotherapy.
There's no reason to be scared by tradition anymore.
We can stop this.
We can stop this.
We are the American people.
We can stop this.
And you have our support.
We're old.
Young.
Straight.
Gay.
We're every race and nationality.
And we're not going to give up.
You can tax it.
You can regulate it.
Apply age restrictions.
You can create millions of new jobs.
We can save our economy.
President Obama?
It's time for legalization.
Legalization?
Yes.
We
can.
This has been a public service moment.
Everyone move. Everyone move. Want to get your targets and start nice.
Marijuana culture is infused throughout America and the world. As we round out the week, we take a look at the 420 phenomenon in movies, TV, music, and sports with former High Times editor and author of Pot Culture, Steve Bloom, in our CelebStoner.com entertainment news. We've been away for a while, but it's time for us to head back to New York and visit with our entertainment news reporter from CelebStoner.com, Steve Bloom, the author of Pot Culture, the A to Z Guide to Stoner Language and Life. And Steve, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Russ. Yes, it has been a while. You've forgotten about me.
I know. I would never forget about you, especially when I'm sitting in Aspen, Colorado, getting all your tweets from the MPP Playboy Mansion party. Tell our listeners about that.
I was out there. You know, I live in New York, but I was in L.A. For the last couple of weeks. Came back on Monday. I was at the THC Expo last weekend, which was great. And then prior to that, I was at the MPP party at the Playboy Mansion, their fourth annual benefit. And it's the first time I've ever been to that event. I think it's the big fundraiser for the year for the MPP. And they certainly had a lot of people there. And I, you know, if all those people paid to get in, they probably have a lot of money left over from the event. They had some good music, the Dandy Warhols, Kyle Gass from Tenacious D. He did a solo performance. And they probably could have used a comedian or something to just kind of like, you know, make it a little more fun. You know, it wasn't really that type of program, you know, where, you know, Rob Campy just came out and gave a opening speech, and they gave out a couple of awards to Tom Amiano and to Todd McCormick, and then they had the music, and you know, it was just a big crowd just running around that place. And you know, if you really want to get into it, you go deep into the grotto and have a little fun, or you just kind of wander around, and you know, plenty of food, lots of drinks,
a lot of celebrities in attendance.
You know, it wasn't really particularly celebrity laden. I would say Adrian Curry might have been the biggest celebrity there. That's kind of a little disappointing in that end of it. But, you know, I don't really, you know, I didn't really find anything to be, too critical about, because they just, you know, they had a big crowd. They had a lot of people there, and they seemed to, you know, serve the purpose. But yeah, there was a little bit of a lack of that. And one thing I did hear that, you know, was kind of a slightly uptight event, you know, where you weren't really allowed to smoke pot, and really wasn't true. I mean, you could wander off and smoke to your heart's content, so you know, you don't want to, you know, stand around the grotto smoking or something, but just go off into the grounds a little bit around, like there's a zoo on the grounds, and you know, everybody could smoke as much as you wanted.
And you also said you were down at the THC Expo. Let's talk about that a bit.
It was great. Really excellent event. You know, Todd McCormick and Brian Roberts put this event on, a first-time event at the L.A. Convention Center. And their estimate was upwards of 35,000 people, which is terrific for a first-time event.
Yeah.
You know, it was your typical expo in a lot of ways, you know, with all these groups, organizations, businesses, you know, coming together and promoting themselves like you'd see at any other kind of expo, you know, with these big display booths. And you know, some of the companies that really did it up. Advanced Nutrients had a huge booth. The Greenhouse came in from Amsterdam, had a big booth. I'd say the pharmacy, and 1, 2, 3 in order of like size of booths, probably would be Advanced Nutrients, the Greenhouse, and the pharmacy. The pharmacy, you know, who kind of gets the lion's share of coverage of for medical dispensaries in the LA area. If you're ever, you know, like the report that was on this week on CNN, of course they went to a dispensary. Where'd they go? To the pharmacy.
Right.
So they were there, and it was kind of broken up into sections, a paraphernalia section with lots of bongs and glass and stuff like that, a hemp clothing and product section, the dispensaries and magazines, nonprofits, normal, MPP, different organizations. I would say the paraphernalia area was probably the most popular, and it was super crowded. You could really get some good deals. You know, it's kind of like Bong Alley. I mean, there was, you know, or as one of my bloggers at Celeb Stoner, Halby Klein, who has a review up, he said the biggest head shop in the world. It was really fun. And one of the things that they added to the mix was they had Oaksterdam University there. And so they had a big area. If you're going to talk about the, you know, the biggest displays, you know, include Oaksterdam as well. And they had a stage, a mini stage, where throughout the 2 days there were speeches and seminars. You didn't really know who was coming next. There wasn't a schedule, but, you know, people like Debbie Goldsberry, as I walked by, or Chris Conrad, or Dale Gehringer would be up on the stage giving a little speech. I know Tommy Chong was there for a short time. The Cottonmouth Kings had a booth as well, Suburban Noise. You know, I believe on Saturday they had a big signing with, you know, a bunch of the guys there. You know, for a first time event, they really drew in, you know, a big chunk of the community. So, you know, I can imagine that, you know, if they're going to continue, you know, they'll be able to really build on it. They did quite a good job. It really was very good. And also they drew off of another, event that was happening, at the convention center that weekend, the Erotica show. Kind of a unique, in that respect, that, you know, there were a lot of kind of very sexy looking women, especially kind of wandering throughout the event. They must have been coming over from the Erotica show just because they wanted to check out the marijuana show, and maybe a little bit of vice versa. But that was really, if you went there, you'd see on the street outside the LA Convention Center, which is right down the block from the Staples Center, you know, a big sign, and it said Erotica Show. And you really wouldn't have known that the THC Expo was happening. You had to kind of know. And I wasn't really sure how well they got the word out, but they certainly did.
Wow. I hope they are able to have that expo again, in the years to come. It's something I'd like to check out. Now, one of the things, people listen to this segment all the time, and they know that we're really into following the celebrities and what happens with them as far as the world of cannabis goes. And, this year, of course, we followed our, Super Bowl stoners, and this year was Santonio Holmes. You've got an update on the Santonio Holmes story for us.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting that Santonio Holmes, who, you know, was the MVP of this year's Super Bowl, the Steelers winning the Super Bowl over the Cardinals, you know, he made a catch with 30 seconds to go to win it all, and he had a really great run throughout the whole postseason, just literally, you know, just kind of like making great catches and touchdowns and really helping lead the Steelers all the way. And back in October of last year, he was pulled over right near the their stadium, and it was sort of a mistaken identity kind of pullover where they were looking for another car that looked similar to his. They pulled it over. They must have smelled some marijuana, and he got arrested for possessing 3 blunts. And he was, you know, immediately suspended for a game. It was, you know, it kind of tarnished the season somewhat. You know, here's a guy doing so well, yet he had this, you know, bust hanging over his head throughout the whole season, head postseason, and it was constantly discussed. And it made for interesting, you know, news fodder, but then turns out that the police really didn't have, you know, significant evidence for the stop. And so just the last week, the case was dismissed against him. So it really leads me to ask the question and begs the question, why was he suspended? You know, I mean, that happens over and over again in the NFL. These players get arrested for marijuana often, and they get suspended before they're found guilty. So, you know, what redress is he going to have? I'd like to know, because I think he should go back to the league. What can the league do? They can't give him back that game, can they?
No, not exactly.
So what can they do to make up for the suspension that he never should have had?
Maybe they could institute a policy that the suspensions don't happen until there's a conviction.
You know, the league should. They should give an apology, and you know, there's something. I don't know what it is. I don't know what you can get back. But and I would think the Players Association would be concerned about this. But I haven't really heard much about it. Maybe it's because it's the football off season. Nobody's paying attention.
Yeah. Before we let you go, Steve, just want to give you a chance to update listeners on what's happening with you. I know it's summertime. You're probably traveling around, and maybe you've got another one of those poker games coming up. So have at it.
No, we're not doing the poker right now. But I mean, pretty much what I've been doing lately. I've been working on my movie guide, the Reefer Movie Madness Ultimate Stoner Guide, Stoner Film Guide, and not really planning on doing too much traveling. Not planning on the Seattle Hemp Fest this year because it's a little too far away to go. And be staying a little bit home as I get work done on this book, which is coming out next April in the 420 cycle. So pretty much be home, watching movies, going to shows, and following my dear darling Mets.
All right. Go Mets, right?
Go Mets.
All right. Well, Steve Bloom runs the website celebstoner.com. It's your number one source for celebrity cannabis news. Check it out. And Steve joins us every other Friday here on the Daily Audio Stash to give us the latest on the celebrities and entertainment report. Thanks a lot, Steve. See you again.
Don't be a stranger.
All right.
Take care.
Just say no.
No matter what you call it, it's a huge part of popular culture.
Where'd you learn that, Cheech? Drug school.
You don't need weed school. You just need a copy of the new book, Pot Culture, the A to Z Guide to Stoner Language and Life.
Hey, this is great, man.
Even if you never smoked marijuana.
I never used marijuana. Sorry.
Don't think you smoked marijuana.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two and didn't inhale.
Or you used to smoke marijuana.
I inhaled frequently. That was the point.
Pot Culture by former High Times editor Steve Bloom and Shirley Halperin will answer every question you ever had about marijuana culture.
Has that marijuana made it back up here yet?
Check out Pot Culture, the A to Z Guide to Stoner Language and Life at Amazon.com or visit potculturebook.com today.
Too bad, man. I just stopped smoking yesterday.
The battle to end adult marijuana prohibition can sometimes seem endlessly frustrating and impossible to overcome. One way we bond as a community and draw strength to continue is by rejuvenating our spirit through art and music. The Marijuana Music Awards exist to recognize those sonic artists in all genres of music who feature a ganja-friendly message to motivate and inspire all the cannabis community. Our Daily Toker Tunes, brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, feature the finest in blues, rock, jazz, hip-hop, rap, reggae, country, bluegrass, and dance music to enhance that 420 feeling and refresh all you stashers for another day on the front lines of the drug war. Enjoy this cut from MarijuanaMusicAwards.com and visit our blog at stash.normal.org to learn how you can vote for your favorites and enter your Toker Tunes in the 2009 Marijuana Music Awards. It's a Rap Friday, and today we hear 2008 American MMA Best Hip-Hop Winning Song, Toke, by Prophecy. Prophecy is a finalist in the 2009 American MMA. We'll find out tomorrow if he wins at the Chicago Peace Fest. For those not able to attend the Peace Fest, the winner's announcement will be simultaneously broadcast by Time for Hemp at JMS Live Radio, which you can find at jawmyspace.com/radio at 5 p.m. Central Time. Prophecy is a music producer and beatmaker specializing in hip-hop, rap, and R&B productions. Prophecy's credits include many independent and underground music releases, remixes, film scores, and TV commercials. Prophecy is currently in the studio with JLP working on a new album, Struggle Hustle Hip Hop, which is sure to take the music industry by storm. With many reputable releases under his belt, Prophecy is continuing to make a name for himself in the music industry and become a staple in the future of music. For the latest about Prophecy, check out myspace.com/prophecy. And registered stashers, you can get an MP3 download of this tune. It is Prophecy with Toke.
In the morning, I'm smoking the reaper that play good bait. Come on and roll. I'm ready to go to the store with the first of the month. Get a switch or rent a phone. Oh, now give me the lighter. Let's go to the spot and kick it. Pop the liquor. Let's start the mission. The robber lips. My foster is in the yes is a bad lesson. It's golden. But the best of my homies blowing. Buddha out in perfect over. We got the coldest reefer. Reefer, the dopest pizza. Drop of the rhythm, the kick of the livers. I'm out of the speaker. Don't blow your tweeter.
Puffin' on die. Just to struggle, get by. My feet were scraping the sky.
Any way that I choose, yeah. Make it a booze, yeah. Judas fools get placed in a tomb, lace in a suit, yeah. I don't need nothing. Combustion debris puffing in these lungs and no seeds stuck in between the green substances. Nothing. A couple blunts to the head, roll up a joint in a span. I'm higher than skydivers at the point of descent.
Take a tip. Take it soap, let the smoke roll. Pass it on to your rope, but open those up. It's time to wait though, make you push the curtain back. I'm certain that the bird will put you through a loop like circus action. Back in the avenue, smack dab in the saddle. You can take a dragon to a grab until you bad your battle wounds. Sitting among the clouds, look at him now. He's hitting the roof and roll. Packing it back in a bag of Jordan is what I call the Super Bowl. No kickoff, low and a sticky kickoff. Cause you got time on your hands like a wristwatch. Don't get it twisted, just twist it until you lift it. And live it from where you're sitting and driven into the kitchen. Listen, I got a prophecy, just properly shot at me. And I could get you possibly open like an autopsy. Take a swish of a pack, roll on the link, get back. And get you back against the recliner, sit back and take it to.
The first time that I played, it was a blunt. One, two, three puffs to the lungs, swallow it up. Got for 5 minutes now that I got the vibe spinning. Now I'm grinning wild. This is why I love it.
Nothing better than a sticky, icky, potent Bombay. Little pipe for the white rhino when I'm playing. Baby, blunt it for wine, ass and a light side. I'll caress your body smooth, make your spine bad. This is for my weed smokers, all my real tweed tokers. Cause I ain't feel nine, hell, it ain't far. Ain't a care but the world, look at the air as it swirls. Out of the blunt, popping a Zego back, but at least the high that I want.
I'm in the vortex, my cerebral cortex feels more stress, more or less paranoid sets. And demons in my section, making X and tilt it to the left. And press my luck against the breath, man.
This is Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of NORML. We are the oldest, largest, and best-known marijuana law reform organization in America, and it's all because of your support. Take some time to join Normal at www.normal.org. Your membership supports this podcast, our websites, our policy research and analysis, and our annual conferences. Changing marijuana laws is a grassroots effort, and it starts with you, the stakeholder. Join Normal today and add your voice to the millions of cannabis consumers who demand equality with our beer-drinking friends.
Legalization, decriminalization, lowest law enforcement priority, medical marijuana, ganja sacrament, consumer cannabis, industrial hemp. The world of marijuana law reform involves many different aspects of cannabis that intersect nearly every public policy discussion in America, including healthcare, the economy, global climate change, law enforcement and prisons, immigration, religion, free speech, energy policy, and war. Now we take a look at how re-legalizing marijuana will change the world in our Normal daily audio stash, Cannabis Conversations.
Earlier this week on the Daily Audio Stash, I brought to you another one of these tragic stories of a police raid where they go out and murder a person's dog. It's a sad story. We reported on it in Berwyn Heights, Maryland. We reported on it in Oklahoma. Today, I want to talk about the incident that just happened this week in Baltimore, Maryland. And joining us today to talk about that is the victim of that incident, Karina Amato from Baltimore. Karina, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Hugh.
Okay, so we told this story briefly on the Daily Audio Stash, and it had to do with this police raid. Can you tell us what happened that day? Were you there at the home?
No, apparently this raid took place at about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Both me and my husband were at work, and I had just gotten to work about an hour into work. I get a frantic call from my neighbor across the street who says, you got to get home, they're over here killing your dogs.
Hmm.
And I was scared because, you know, I knew they were doing a raid, you know, and she told me that. And, you know, she told me, like, both dogs had been killed. So, you know, I called Rick, and he's going to run over and make some calls, got some people to come over and take a look, you know, keep an eye on the house. So there was plenty of people around, eyewitnesses, but I wasn't there myself.
Hmm. So there was two dogs involved in this.
Yes, I had two dogs. One was Jasmine, which is the one that was killed, and my other dog, Zeus. And luckily, because Jasmine was in heat, Zeus was in the basement during the day. You know, she had a little apartment down there. And so she was spared. I didn't know this until the end of the day. I was told all day that both dogs had been shot and killed. So I didn't really find out until later. And when we had to go to the pound to pick him up, and he was listed as lost. So he could have been put up for adoption. I don't even know what happened, but my neighbors told me that they had called animal control.
Okay.
To my neighbors, and, you know, like, all the kids in the neighborhood know my dogs. You know, they're like neighborhood dogs. It's amazing how many people have turned up to sign the cards and offer their support in any way.
Yeah. Now, which agency was this that was involved in the raid? Was it the Baltimore Police Department? Was it a county unit? Do you know?
Well, you know, they did leave the search and seizure warrant on the door, so it says any police officer of Baltimore City.
Okay. So they did have a warrant here. A judge signed off on a warrant. What was the probable cause? Why did they choose to burst into your home?
Okay. I mean, this is totally unexpected to us because, I mean, we bought our house a couple years ago. You know, we moved down from Maine, although I had lived in this area when I was younger, but we were living in Maine and got some inheritance money, so we looked to Baltimore as a great place to live. And, you know, all in all, I'm really in love with Baltimore, and I wanted to do anything I could to help the community. I'm a community gardener and all that. So it totally came out of, you know, blue because I've been in touch with police. I mean, I wanted everybody in the neighborhood to know us, so... you know, this just happened. It was totally shocking. So I have the affidavit right here, and it says, I mean, there's so many things that are weird about it. First of all, it says, that it's, is in violation of state's narcotic laws, but it says that, during the second week of June, okay, so this happened just like last Wednesday, so there wasn't too much of an investigation that had occurred. It said that they had received, you know, notice that We were holding caches of guns. That we were selling marijuana and were known to store firearms within the dwelling, which the informant described as being attached to a church, which our house is. After they received that, they began covert operations. And they said during the daytime hours in the second week of June, in covert vehicles, with an unobstructed view, and they also mentioned the dog in there, so they were aware of the dog prior to the raid, which is where I think they really went wrong with that, because they had ample time to call animal control, and that's what animal control is for.
Right.
And when I called animal control, they told me the procedure is they're supposed to meet two blocks away from the raid and call animal control, but which they didn't do any of that.
I see.
Anyway, they just say, you know, people were at the door, looked like they were taking currency, hand them small objects the same size and shape as CDS's package and sold in the area.
Mm-hmm.
You know, based on that, they saw somebody come to the door, you know, and somebody hand them a package that was the same shape and size as something.
So they did this investigation, and during their crack investigation, they decide that you're some high-level marijuana dealer with a load of guns stored at your home, right? They figured this out within a week.
We're known to have this. It wasn't even a week. It was like 3 days. I mean, this happened last Wednesday. So how much into the second week of June was it?
Yeah. So can I ask the obvious question here? Are you a couple that is running large amounts of marijuana and storing guns in your home?
Heck no.
Yeah.
We have never, you know, I've been with Rick for 14 years. And even though he comes from a military background and all that, we have never had a gun in our house. You know, I wouldn't allow anyone with a gun in my house.
Except for the police with a warrant, obviously.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just so many things that's bad about it, but I can almost accept that if they had reasonable proof, like, for instance, one thing they said on here that, I mean, it's just some crazy things, but they say, in the location to hide the same, blah, 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 hold on. This exact type of transaction was observed over and over again by your affiant 15 times during observations. Also, the affiant, I guess who's the informant, walked through the area and observed an absorbent amount of empty larger Ziplocs, which I don't even know what that is. You know, like in the street.
Ziploc bags, I guess.
Yeah, like we've, you know, I don't even understand how that even happened. You
so
know,
so like, where are they getting this idea? I mean, they say, you know, in this affidavit, they say they're seeing a lot of these transactions, people coming to the door and so on. Are you running some kind of home-based business? Are there people coming to your door a lot? What's the deal?
Well, it's me and Rick live there. We're both very community-oriented. We're well integrated in the neighborhood. I have two teenage daughters that are 19, so, you know, the boys flock to the steps, and anybody can tell me that I'm constantly hollering out the door, don't sit on the steps, you know, I don't like people, you know, gathering on the steps, but, you know, I mean, in here somewhere it says that three black girls came to the door. You know, I mean, I've got kids.
Yeah.
You know, plus Rick does bicycle repairs for people, kids in the neighborhood. There's always little kids coming to the door to get patch kits, to borrow the pump. You know, it's constant. I mean, Rick's a very social person, so, you know, a lot of times I'm like, you know, I don't, you know, like a lot of people around. That's just the way we are. You know, I run the community garden.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think there's an exorbitant amount of people coming to our door, but we're like social people. And our neighbors down the street, you know, they come up and sit on the steps and,
right.
You know, I don't really, well, I just really didn't get that.
Well, you sound like a lot of, you know, typical average couples in America that have friends and have teenagers and, you know, not everybody lives like a shut-in with no visitors. That's the thing that kind of bugs me about this whole search warrant. They say, you know, based on all this traffic. Well, a lot of people have friends. A lot of people have traffic at their home. Let me ask you this. Just so you get the call. The police are raiding your home. You get the call. Can you describe for us the scene? You know, when you first arrive there and you find, you know, what has happened, what has happened to your home and to your dog? Can you tell our listeners a little bit about that and what it felt like?
Well, you know, I was at work, so I was scared because I didn't want to come home. You know, I just called Rick and then his friends and people in the neighborhood were over here. So I was kind of just letting him deal with it. You know, A, I didn't want to get arrested on the scene, and I didn't want to see the blood. I didn't want to see them. I was scared, so I didn't really get over to the house. And he called me and he said, I just want to let you know that our house is destroyed. So, you know, I was prepared for that. So when I finally did get to the house, I mean, there was blood through every room. In every room, there was a giant pile of debris, like in the middle of the room. So, like, every dresser, every piece of furniture in the house was smashed. And people were saying, like, this looks like a lot of anger, you know, why were they so angry? And they're saying, because they didn't find anything. I mean, everything was overturned, like, things that were stomped in, like, art pencils were broken. And there was holes punched in the wall. So it's like every single room was just a pile of debris in the middle of the room.
Yeah, that's something I like to point out in this story. And this is not atypical. I mean, this happens all the time in these types of raids, is that, you know, you might be able to understand them, you know, pulling drawers out and tossing things out of drawers, you know, to find contraband. But this idea that they're going to smash the drawer itself, or like you said, breaking pencils. What, you were hiding weed inside pencils? Come on now.
Exactly. I mean, they broke stained glass windows off the wall. Windows. I mean, that's what I keep saying, you know. Rick says I shouldn't say that, but I always say, you know, I can understand that, you know, they might have a legal search and that they could come. I mean, no one was here to interrupt them. They could have gone through. No one's happy when they get searched. I understand pulling drawers out. I understand dumping things. But I'm calling this unreasonable search and seizure. Mm-hmm. And I have a constitutional protection from that.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's the next step? Have you guys retained an attorney? Are you looking to prosecute or sue in any way?
Well, you know, I was referred to this one attorney who deals with this kind of thing, but I haven't really been completely able. I haven't really secured him yet. So that's one thing that I really need to work on. I don't even know how to go about it.
Okay.
You know, I did talk to my councilman, and the news was out here from two different news stations. So I'm really looking for an attorney. I mean, I think I have a pretty good case, especially about the dog, because they didn't do the procedure. The procedure is to call the animal control, especially when they knew the animal was on the premises.
And if, from the story that I read on the news, wasn't the situation where they first went into the home when they saw the dog ran away and ran upstairs.
Right. I mean, my dog, she was a Rottweiler. I mean, that's no excuse. I did know about the dog. Mm-hmm. And there was people, like children and my neighbors were all out in front of the house. And they were telling them, let us get the dog, let us get the dog. But they put they came with AK-47s, and they told those children, especially this one 13-year-old was saying, let me get the dog. And he said, back up or I'm going to shoot you too. They threatened the children in the neighborhood to witness this violence, and they shot through the mail slot, and you could see the blood spatter running up the stairs. So she ran up to our bedroom and was cowering next to our bed. And they came up there, and I mean, even then, they were the only justification they're supposed to have for shooting an animal, which does have rights, is when they fear their life is in danger.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, by that point, you know, I know they're going to say, oh, we didn't know an injured animal. You know, I'm sure they're going to have all these excuses, but I don't think the animal lovers are going to buy that.
No. This is all about dominance and control and terrorism is what it is. It's about terrorizing people.
Terrorism. You know, I'm still in such shock because, I mean, I've lived in D.C. and I've lived in other states and I've had, you know, the usual kind of, you know, interactions with the police, but I've never been disrespected in this way. I'm not treated like a citizen with any kind of, you know, restraint or respect at all.
Yeah. This is how we always remind people that this war on drugs is not a war on drugs. It's a war on people. And a lot of time people like you who aren't even involved in drugs in any way get caught up in this. And it's just sad. And I really hope you're able to find a lawyer who can take it to these cops and see that this doesn't happen to anybody else again. Karina, before I let you go here, I first of all want to thank you so much for being so brave. And, you know, this has been just this week. So I know, like you say, you're still in shock and I know our listeners are going to be really happy to hear from this and to get this information. Is there anything else you'd like to say before we wrap up? Anything you'd like to tell people?
Well, you know, I was just going to mention, before, you know, that we live in West Baltimore. You know, and like, you ask the cops and they're like, this place is a crap hole, you know, you should move. It's really not like that. It's a great little space that I'm sure the city doesn't feel that way. But there are drug dealers right now on the corner on both ends of our street. So there's no lack of, like, sources for them to direct their mission.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and according to this affidavit, it was like informant number 4774, who is known to provide good information, good reliable information. Just based on this, it's like total hearsay.
Yeah.
And they addressed it in the affidavit. They said, why didn't we, when we saw like a kid coming to the door and taking a little package, why didn't they arrest somebody then? Because they were in an ongoing investigation. I mean, they don't even bother to, you know, catch anybody doing anything. This whole thing is based entirely on hearsay.
Yeah. Yeah. The testimony of these, what they call confidential informants, or what on the street are sometimes known as snitches. And a lot of times these guys are saying things they know the cops want to hear so they can get a better deal on their crime. They can get a plea bargain of some sort. This criminal justice system by the use of informants is another really sad aspect of this war on drugs. And I'm so sorry that you got caught up in it, Karina.
Well, I just want to also say that no drugs were found in the house. They say they found a sandwich bags, and they took a scale, which I work at home doing shipping and mailing, which I now can't do.
Right.
I haven't heard one word from the police station or anyone. You know, I mean, my door is still knocked off. I mean, they took $98 of the so-called caches of currency they found in the house. They took $98. No, that's all the money I really had.
Yeah.
So we're just sitting here, you know, and I'm going to really try to get a lawsuit, and I've set up a website of justiceforjasmine@hotmail.com. If anyone would like to contact me, you know, I will definitely, you know, interact, and I appreciate your help very much. You know, you're really doing a good thing, and,
well, thank you.
Know, I'd like to help the cause anyway, you know. I always was interested in this cause.
Well, thank you so much.
I never suspected I'd be a victim myself.
Yeah, that's the sad part about it. Now, this address, Justice for Jasmine, is that the number 4 or the word 4?
The word 4.
Okay, justicefor.jasmine@hotmail.com. You can get in touch with Karina Amato. Are you guys setting up any sort of fund that people could donate to help you get legal help?
Well, I was going to try to work my next... First, we did the memorial and everything, and the press was over here, so... You know, I was working on getting the lawyer. You know, it's a little bit handicapped because things are, like, smashed and broken. It's hard to even get to whatever. But that my next phase is I want to try to get a petition going. I just need to sort of define what I want the petition, you know, what we should be asking for in that. And, you know, I mean, between me and my daughters, we're not a force to be reckoned with. I mean, we are a force to be reckoned with. So we will, you know, I'm thinking of putting a board in front of my house with some notice with some information where people can get to us. I mean, I'm trying to find some, you know, at least a contingency lawyer or something. I mean, we certainly don't have any money to pay a lawyer. If I did,
okay.
Me.
Well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I've got some list of attorneys from the Normal Legal Committee. I'll find the ones from the Baltimore area and forward those contacts to you. Also want to let people know listening to this, if you're living in the Baltimore area, living in the Maryland area, we are looking to form a chapter of Normal in that area. And Karina, if we can get a Normal chapter formed, I'm sure the folks would be glad to volunteer to help you out with any protests or petition gathering or anything like that. We'll get people organized to help you.
Russ, my house is open to you. I will do that today. You know, I will work for that cause. I mean, it's something we've always believed in. I mean, we don't believe in really any other kind of drugs or, you know, I'm not into any kind of, you know, we've never been that kind of people, but always been pro-normal. And we, for one thing, we always go to the 4th of July event.
Excellent.
You know, they have the smoke in there, and we always go to the, not really to the smoke in, but to the after thing at the, you know, on the Constitution, on the Mall.
Okay.
And so I was thinking of definitely going there, and I'm just going to have petitions everywhere and go, and I'm going to try to get enough signatures to try to affect something. Now, when the congressman and then the news people told me, they contacted the police, and they said the police are not letting out any information.
Oh, I'll bet.
That they are bracing for a lawsuit, and they are going to get it.
Oh, yes, they are. Well, I'll tell you what, also, Karina, the week of September 20th, I'll be in Washington, D.C. I'll make a trip to schedule a trip to get down there to Baltimore, and if we've got an event happening or something like that, we can speak at that event and try to get you some more press, okay?
Yeah, I appreciate that. And anyone who needs a place to stay, I mean, the place is kind of crappy right now, but I'm getting it together. But we have plenty of rooms, giant house. We'd be more than happy to, you know.
And no pesky furniture to get in the way, right?
Right. I mean, we still have beds. We still have the beds. You know, I mean, there's no dressers and stuff, but, you know, that wasn't even the main thing about it. I mean, I'm sure that if the house had just been trashed, this is something that probably happens to people every single day.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact about the dog is what's going to motivate me, and it's inexcusable, and I'm not going to let it go. I promise my daughters that I'm not going to let it go. I mean, so that's for, you know, at least to get some, I mean, the police didn't follow the procedure, but there should be anybody, if they come to anybody's house to raid, apparently if there's a dog in the house, which a lot of poor people have to protect their belongings, they don't want to have guns in the house. Like us, we had a dog. It was just to keep someone from breaking in during the house, the day. And, you know, they're just going to shoot through the mail slot and just kill anybody's dog.
Yeah. And how would they have known there wasn't a child there too at the same time? They, you know, shooting through a mail slot. That's reckless.
I mean, with an AK-47, I mean, just the whole thought of it, it just is like something I never would expect in America. You know, I can't even wrap my head around that.
Yeah, it's crazy.
You know, the city wants less, you know, the children experience less violence. But, you know, this is no excuse. And the fact they did this at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, they seem to think is really odd. They usually do it like early in the morning, and to do this in the afternoon.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, Karina Amato from Baltimore, Maryland, we're going to keep in touch and keep people updated on this story, because this dog murder, this canicide has to stop, and these SWAT style raids have to stop as well. The email address, if people want to get involved, is justice4jasmine. That's justice, the word for jasmine at hotmail.com. And Karina, thanks so much for joining us here on the Daily Audio Stash today.
All right. Thank you, Russ. Thank you to all your readers. I look forward to hearing from you. Thank you.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with the reminder to catch Cannabis Common Sense on Ustream.tv. It's at Ustream.tv/channel/cannabis-common-sense. If you didn't get all of that, just check out stash.normal.org. We've got a live window to the show that starts at 8 p.m. Pacific time. And if you don't manage to catch the show live, it's archived on Ustream.tv as well. You can watch it at your leisure. It's a live call-in show. You can reach us at 503-288-4448. I'll be there with Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, featured recently as King Bong and Legal Pot Pusher by CNN. And you can bet we'll have some clips from that show and a few words to say about it. We're also joined by Normal Board's Madeline Martinez, who's also Executive Director of Oregon Normal, and it's always a good call-in show with live music and some great information. So check it out, Cannabis Common Sense on Ustream.tv. Thanks for downloading the podcast. We'll be back next week with more news and interviews you can use for the cannabis community. And until that time, take care of each other, tokers.